Windows down, music up. Get ready to hit the road in a new Chevy SUV or truck. Chevy is a name you know and trust. It's Chevy as American as apple pie and baseball. Check out the full line of Chevy vehicles at your local Chevy dealer. Chevy, drive Chicago.
John Landecker at 720 WGN. This article, this information really drew my attention, because who amongst us, well, I'm sure there are some, didn't have at one point or another baseball trading cards. I mean, initially, remember back in the day, they came in with some gum in a package. Well, man, those days are long gone. Michael Lasaki is a sports and sports memorabilia expert, president of the Baseball in the Attic. What is baseball in the attic, he said, diverting himself.
Hey, John, it's great to be back on the show with you. I am a sports appraiser, and Chicago is home, but I travel every week outside of Chicago reviewing collections, primarily vintage trading card collections.
Yeah. But, I mean, what is baseball in the attic?
Oh, so that's the name of my company, because before I named the company, a lot of times I was searching for baseballs or baseball cards in people's attics.
Okay. I guess I just didn't read the writing on the wall, which is right in front of my face. So I'm reading this article in the Tribune on Sunday titled, "Baseball Cards Are Worth More Than Ever, and Kids Are Making a Fortune." They're throwing around sums of $10,000 and over, $1 million managing portfolios that are kids, people under 21, people in their teens, whatever. How is all of this possible?
Yes, all that's true. So we just finished the National Sports Collectors Convention, which is a five-day show in Rosemont. And yes, there's a lot of teenagers who are walking the show floor with $50,000, $100,000 in cards in their cases. And then you see also the same age range with bricks of cash, tens of thousands of dollars in cash. Oh. They're literally throwing it around, throwing it across tables to just buy a card.
They're throwing packages like $10,000 in a package across a table to buy a card. Is that what you just said?
Yes.
Man, that's a movie. I'm sorry. We got a movie right there. Speaking of
that, there actually were several different movies and documentaries. I actually was filmed for a movie at the show. This is news now. Everything that we're talking about now on the air today is front page news.
Well, I can understand why. What we're talking about are baseball cards. First of all, well, is it just baseball cards, or are there more than baseball? There are cards from other sports. Are there?
Yes, football. Okay. Hockey, basketball cards, also sports memorabilia, like a game-used Sandy Koufax jersey.
Right. Now, what happened that elevated the price of, let's just use baseball cards for example. What happened to elevate the price of a baseball card to $10,000?
Well, I don't think we have enough time tonight. I could talk for hours on this, but I will tell you that now these cards are alternative assets. What we're seeing is primarily young males, age of 30 years and below, are not investing in the stock market like prior generations. Right. They don't believe in it. They are buying and selling trading cards. That is their retirement. That's what they enjoy. It's fun. It's topical. It's part of pop culture now.
Well, I understand that. But, you know, you can't sell something for an amount of money unless there's somebody willing to spend that amount of money to buy it. What is it about these cards? They weren't initially manufactured to be to cost that much. What is it about these cards that elevate them into that amount of money? I mean, there's got to be a reason.
Yeah, so a lot of it, just like everything in this country now, is about gambling. And so every year we have certain chase cards where Topps will insert, I don't know if you remember back in the day, the Willy Wonka Chocolate Factory golden ticket. The same thing with trading cards. There's a one-of-one maybe it's a game used patch or an autograph that's affixed to a baseball card or basketball card. Uh-huh. And that is the chase card that everybody wants. And those cards sell for millions and millions of dollars.
Why? I mean, what are you going to do with a baseball card with something attached to it? Put it in a case and admire it when you pass by for $1 million? And no gum?
Gum is long gone. In fact, a lot of people think that gum started in the 1950s with Topps or Bowman, but that's not true. It really started in 1933 at Gowdy Gum Company in Boston, Massachusetts, where they inserted gum into packages of baseball cards.
Okay, so what about, okay, so these young people are acting in a number one way, let's see, they're acting in a business type fashion. They are marketing. They are, I'm assuming, using social media, and they are managing their assets and making a lot of money. Would that be a correct scenario?
Yes, all of it. Mm. So like I said, I just got back from the National. There was a booth next to me at the show managed by five kids. Well, I shouldn't say kids, but they were 22, 23, 24 years old.
Yeah.
And this is their full-time job. Every weekend going to shows, buying and selling.
So they're actually sort of playing the baseball card market, if you will, for lack of a better term. I mean, buy low, sell high, analyze what the market will take on that day, try to get whatever it is that market will absorb. I mean, these young men, and maybe young women too, I don't want to be sexist about it. I mean, young persons have to also develop, I would think, to be successful in this, a pretty keen sense of how to run a business, because that's what's going on underneath it all, right?
Yes, absolutely. But you also have to understand causation and different fluctuations, meaning these things like a stock don't go up forever or don't go down forever.
You just saw
in the past 6 months, Michael Jordan's rookie card in any grade doubled. And so it's the values have gone parabolic, and that is not going to continue forever.
What determines that fluctuation in price? Or does it vary from person to person and card to card?
Well, generally speaking, it's supply and demand. And there's people moving money from, let's say, one card into another or one sport into another. So let's say if it's the off season for a sport, maybe there's less eyeballs, so less demand. And then so the money is moving into the current sport. And then when that sport is over, then the money goes back to the sport that is now playing.
I'm still fascinated, so we're going to do some more when we come back on 720 WGN. 720.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
720 WGN with John Landecker. We're talking about sports and sports memorabilia, but not your average conversation. Trust me. We're talking with Michael Ososki, who's the president of Baseball in the Attic, which comes from, you know, rummaging around the attic when you're a kid and hoping you find a car that's worth something, which brings me to the first question that I want to get to around this time, and that is exactly that. How do you, if you're just a regular person at home and you want to find out if one of these cards is worth anything, is there a way to go about that?
Yes. The first recommendation I have is look at the card that you have, look at the condition, and then go to eBay.com, but click on sold listings. Because if you don't, it's just going to show what things are being offered at. You click on sold listings and compare what's sold to the condition that you have, and then you can better assess what the value is.
And also, it occurs to me that these aren't worth anything unless there's somebody willing to buy it, right? I mean,
True.
It makes sense. You can't sell something to somebody who doesn't want it. So someone at the other end of this equation is willing to pay. I heard that one baseball card went for $1 million. It takes two to tangle, so to speak. So I find it to be a supply and demand, or if the normal rules of business apply, you and I and everyone knows what $100 bill is and what it buys and what it looks like. But do we know what a baseball card is worth and what it'll buy? No. That would be a very small minority of people who would do that. So you say, well, obviously you have to have the baseball card in good condition, but then you check online to see who has sold corresponding cards. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and also cards, there are third-party graders that will grade a card on a scale usually of 1 to 10, 1 being horrible, 10 being perfect. I am the head appraiser, PSA, which is the world's largest sports grader in the world, and that's what they do. So what happens is a lot of times people will see a world record price. Maybe it's a 1952 Topps Mickey Mantle that sold several years ago for $12.5 million. And they say, I have that same one. I'm a millionaire. Well, that's almost never the case because the one that you have is ungraded and it's not in the same condition. So yours might still be worth $20,000, $30,000. It's just not worth $12 million.
Well, I would take the $20,000 or $30,000. I mean, I'd have no problem with that. do you have any, I mean, does this exist on a normal parent-child relationship in a house? I mean, do you have any advice for parents whose kids, they hear this, they hear about the money that's attached to what's basically started out as a hobby? Do you have any advice for them getting into this and not getting burned by, I can't believe I'm going to say this, bad trades or internet scams? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and first off, I will say that most households are collecting. Now, pre-COVID, we didn't see this. Now, there's tens of millions of parents collecting with their sons and daughters, which is just wonderful. But yes, this hobby, I shouldn't even say a hobby. It's more than a hobby now. It's big business. It's highly unregulated. So, and there's scam artists involved here and cheaters and card trimmers. So you have to educate yourself. And then once you do that, when you start doing business with people, it's important to make sure that they're reputable, they're transparent, they're honest. You can go to Google reviews and ask around for and find out who's good and who's not.
I would think that that would be vitally important, that you would be able to have it appraised by somebody who is actually licensed. Are you licensed, or is it just something that you've earned through working in the industry? I mean, how does one obtain that?
So I am a USPAF compliant sports appraiser. It stands for Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice. I'm on the board of ISA, International Society of Appraisers. I'm the head appraiser of PSA, like I said. And so this is all I do. I'm like a one-trick pony. I've been doing it for decades. And so I'm very fortunate that now I work in a field, even though it's very niche what I do, that it's well-respected. Whereas 10 years ago, when I told somebody I was a sports appraiser, they didn't really know what that was or how I could even make a living doing it.
Not anymore. Not with these figures that I see coming out. Let me see. We have a few minutes left. Let me make sure I get in everything that I wanted to. How about these organizations like, on the tip of my tongue, Fanatics, for instance, or what are the other big betting and selling companies that are out that are available on the internet, that are available through social media? They must have some kind of influence on this, don't they?
Fanatics is a huge player because they own Topps, and Topps produces.
Yeah.
Yeah. they produce all the baseball cards, football cards, basketball cards, and also eBay, obviously, is a huge 64,000-pound gorilla. PSA, which is the world's largest third-party grader of sports collectibles. So between those three entities, they really control the market.
Wow. So do you, since you're a certified appraiser of all of this stuff and these baseball cards, if you find the right people and the right appraiser, can have an astounding value, which is really sort of unbelievable. Do you have any advice about how to get into this?
Well, people usually call me for one of four purposes: insurance, donation, estate planning, or divorce. If somebody was to try and get into the hobby, my suggestion would be to go to a local card show, not a big one, but like a smaller one on the weekends, walk around, ask questions to dealers, ask questions to the attendees, and start to better understand where your role will be in the hobby, what you like, what you don't like. That would be my suggestion.
You don't deal in anything like superhero comics, do you?
No, I just do sports. Right. I only appraise
sports.
Sports.
That's what I thought. It is a, well, I'm not going to say a narrow field, but it is a distinctive field, and that is sports memorabilia, concentrating basically on the majority of it being on baseball trading cards. Are these the same kind of cards that we had, and they're just suddenly worth a whole bunch of money? Or has somebody manufactured the Bitcoin of card, if you will, and it brings with it a high price?
Well, it's a little bit of both. The cards, the modern cards that are selling for millions or $10 million are typically manufactured scarcity. So these are cards that, these were cards that are produced to be scarce and rare, which is different from vintage cards, which is just natural scarcity. There were not that many produced, not many survived, and even less survived in mint condition.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to start following this. And it's not that I have any baseball cards, but it just seems to be a very interesting phenomenon that's happening out there. Michael, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. It's always fun being on your show.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Give me a baseball card. Oh, I'm kidding.